stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.
You are looking at the Titanic of ABC's primetime history. This is the never-aired second episode of Turn On.
She said it was wonderful, and she thanked me for the big one.
The network canceled the show after the first episode. But according to the show's creator, the head of one affiliate couldn't wait that long.
He went on the air during the first telecast of Turn On himself and said, the remainder of this program will not be seen this evening or ever.
Wow. Ever.
Yeah. That's bad, dude.
So, Scott, what did we just hear there?
We heard a little bit of news clip about a show from the 1960s by the creator of Laugh-In called Turn On.
Yeah, and Turn On is considered by some the biggest flop on television ever, biggest comedy flop on television ever. And yes, once again, you've tuned into another episode of
Comedy History 101.
Where we school you in comedy. I, of course, am Harmon Leon, and with me, as always, of course, Scott Colonico. How are you, Scott?
Pretty good, Harmon. I'm here in Berlin. Things are turning a bit chilly. The fall leaves
blah,
are out.
Blah, blah, blah. Talking about the weather. Sorry. Sorry.
It's good. No, that's the thing, because we can all agree on the weather.
Huh, okay, all right. Yeah. We'll save that for our other podcast called Weather or Not, where we all we do is tell you about the temperature at the time of the recording.
Wow, that was a little aggressive. You can start a podcast where you just insult
people. Call it aggressiveness? I know, this is how we are in Trump America. We just ridicule and mock.
That's part of the fake news.
It's a trickle down effect from the man above, and we don't mean the big man above. We mean the orange man above. Is that we just
the orange man. We
just mock and ridicule. Some say that's insult comedy because tying it into Comedy History 101. Yeah. I say it's just being an asshole.
It's like having Andrew Dice Clay in charge, man.
No. At least Andrew Dice Clay had a construction of some semblance of jokes. This is just
you mean like the one where he hangs the dead gay guy in Brooklyn? That, like that one.
Yeah, you have that one. Yeah. Due to character. I don't think our president is doing a character. He is just doing himself. Anyways, just a side note. A friend of mine and friend of yours, we were talking about how Alec Baldwin really isn't funny doing his Trump impression, because it's essentially you're already doing a parody of something that is pretty much a parody.
It's kind of like those, I can't remember those two guys who started doing those, like the airplane style knockoffs, like Meet the Spartans, and not the Scary Movies guys, but not the Wayans brothers, but the guys who do the other ones, and like they're
you mean the Zucker brothers?
To the point where no. It's like it's some other. I don't know if it's brothers, but it's some guys who are doing the parody movies, but now they're so bad where they're like parody, like in one of the parody movies they parodied Borat, and it's just like, dude, you're parodying somebody who is a set, you know?
You're being satirical about something that's being satirical. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's like those guys who do the it's a step beneath the Wayans brothers. It's a step beneath Scary Movies. It's like Meet the Spartans, I think, was one of the movies they did. There's a couple more where they like turn they just crank these movies out, but they make money with them. But it's that it's like making fun of parodies where it's like, dude, you're parodying a parody?
Yeah, I think that just cancels.
Question mark?
Yeah, so, that's the point. I think any kind of Trump impression is always like, he's already a parody.
Exactly, yeah.
So, I guess in this day and age, and maybe we're doing two podcasts today.
Okay, yeah, sure.
You were doing the parody podcast, and then the history of Turn On. But for my political satirical money these days, I would just give me a John Oliver or a Bill Maher or a Samantha Bee.
Yeah, I mean, I always thought John Oliver was great, and I actually remember watching The Daily Show when Jon Stewart was out, and they had Colbert actually hosted it for a few days. I remember
it was
that.
A bit going, shaky. Yeah, I remember that. Fun. It was a bit shaky. Though, you know, he's weird. But Colbert's great on his late show monologues.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was weird because you were used to seeing Jon Stewart up there, but then when Colbert did, it was still pretty good too. You know, so he was a good guy. It's that's the kind of stuff we like. Yeah, so we can both agree to that.
Yeah,
and not bad parodies.
Exactly. But what can we? Another thing we could agree upon is the topic for today's episode is once again. So we heard a little segment up front, and the reason why we didn't have a large amount of video footage or audio clip of that is we're doing the topic today is this TV show called Turn On that came out on ABC on February 1969. It was produced by George Schlater, who produced Rowena Martin's Laugh-In and...
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight, NBC, the Not Bad Crowd, proudly presents the 100th Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, starring Dan Rowan, Dick Martin, Ruth Betty.
And the reason that we don't have any audio footage other than what we played up front is it aired one episode and one episode only. And that is if you were in New York. If you were in California, the episode never aired. If you were in, I think Cleveland, after they came back from the first commercial break, people tuned in to watch the show, saw a blank screen and a man playing the organ, which wasn't part of the show. they simply pulled the show mid-show, which I don't think has ever happened other than the show. So it's considered the biggest flop in TV comedy history.
Yeah, it was kind of like a precursor to social media where the word got out on the East Coast about how bad that show was, and then people were calling each other, other stations were calling each other saying, you've got to pull this show, and so by the time it was supposed to air, in California, it was never on the air.
Yeah, and that's the power of when it was just a three-network operation. I mean, just to give you a little background, there was no Netflix, there was no Hulu.
Yeah, there's no demand. There was no
Daily Motion.
Nope. If you had to change a channel, and then at 1 o'clock at night, the TV would go off.
That's right.
There'd be no more.
But the show seems kind of funny. I mean, and there was a lot of talent behind it because Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, which George Schlater produced, premiered in 1967, and this was 1969. So essentially, I think Bristol Myers was the sponsor of the show that came to them and offered George Schlater the opportunity to pretty much, I think, produce what he wanted. Is that correct?
The arrogance of power took over. And, you know, I'm cocky now, but 40 years ago with a 50 share, forget about it. And that's when we sold Turn On.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was given a blank check because he was like, as he described it, you know, he was full of, hubris after, I think his quote was like, after I got a 50 share, I could do what I wanted. George Schlater said that. And so, yeah, he was doing what he wanted with Turn On.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem so bad because basically the writing staff included a young Albert Brooks, which, so that was in the Wikipedia description of a young Albert Brooks. It would be weird if it said the writing staff included a presently day-aged Albert Brooks for 1969. So, of course, it's a young Albert Brooks. They couldn't have said it included Albert Brooks.
We should flag that in Wikipedia because that's not descriptive.
Yeah, take it down.
I know, yeah.
So not only, I think the premise of the show, again, there was only one episode, so we don't really know how the other episodes would have gone. It had a guest host, and that guest host, of course, was, who, Scott?
That was Tim Conway of kind of pre-Carol Burnett fame. He was kind of a known TV star at that point, but, you know, on his way up, so that was interesting.
Was it pre-Carol Burnett? When did Carol Burnett premiere?
Don't, you shouldn't ask me that, dude.
Here comes a siren, so I can look it up. Hold on.
Okay, look it up, yeah.
It premiered in 1967.
Okay, so it was. So he's already a star after the Carol Burnett Show. And there's actually, I did see one outtake from the Carol Burnett Show that I did wind up laughing a lot at. That had 20 million hits on YouTube.
What happened?
It's pretty funny, you know. It's like when they do the Mama's Family, yep. the Southern family, and it's Tim Conway doing his character. He's talking about a dwarf guy and an elephant, and it's actually pretty funny. And it's all an outtake. But the funny thing is, he was so straight faced when he was telling the story, but everybody else was just on the floor.
There was that the deal with the Carol Burnett Show, and again, we mock, like, say Jimmy Fallon for laughing at their own jokes, but wasn't the Carol Burnett Show all about them laughing at their own jokes?
Here's the interesting thing about that. Okay, well, while we're tying this in, because this is comedy history and it is on, I believe, on the subject. Yes. So when Saturday Night Live first started, they kind of started as an antidote to the Carol Burnett Show. Oh, I'll wait for the siren.
No, there you go.
They started as an antidote to the Carol Burnett Show, because people on Saturday Night Live hated that when the people would start cracking up at their own skits. And they would actually had a phrase for it. They would say, that's too Carol Burnett. They would say that if people were doing that.
Yeah.
And now it's come full circle. Well, Jimmy Fallon was the worst, you know, because I think they're a little bit better about it now. But Jimmy Fallon was just cracking up at his own skits.
Yeah, right? The whole point is, like, you're a professional that, you know, you shouldn't be laughing at your own stuff because it's so fucking precious.
If you, I would urge you and the rest of while we're talking about Tim Conway and turn on, if you just do Tim Conway Elephant Story, it's actually pretty damn impressive. Where he's telling this story and the rest of the cast is just like cracking up. It's funny, and it's so you can see why George Schlatter might want someone like Tim Conway as a host of Turn On.
Yeah, Tim Conway is funny. So the original episode, I think it was the pilot. Tim Conway is the host, and throughout the episode, he tries committing suicide, and they showed that to the sponsors, Bristol Myers, and they they went from having a commitment for 13 episodes to 16 episodes.
Which is weird, which, like, you would think, you go, okay, wait a minute, why, this show that's so bad, then why would you order more of them?
Well, I think we'll dive into this, you know, further in, but was it bad, or was it, as they say, it was ahead of its time, or was it just all the political bureaucraticness of you know, a three network TV system where affiliates had an important say, you know, really brought it down? And again, well, we won't know because there's no footage of it.
We do have a couple of things. I just want to throw a couple things up front before we get into it. As you mentioned, Tim Conway was the host, but his do you remember who his co-host on the show was, Harmon?
I don't. Who? A computer.
Yeah, it was computer.
Yeah, tell about that premise. It does kind of seem like an interesting premise. Just to set it up before you jump in, this was around the time that 2001 A Space Odyssey came out, and I think having a computer, like an old timey 1969 computer, I guess maybe was it like playing off of HAL from 2001.
I don't think it was like explicit, but that must have been in there. People would have known that about that. I think the other interesting thing that George Schlatter brought up was that he made use of a lot of a new instrument called a Moog synth, Moog or Moog. Watch out, nerds. Moog synthesizer. Which had just kind of been popularized. And so apparently there's a lot of that in the show, and there's no laugh track, which I think might have thrown people off.
Yeah, so instead of a laugh track, they just had, like, sound effects. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems kind of funny-ish, you know? And it just seems... So here's a description. It was using various rapid-fire jokes and risque skits, but no laugh track. The program was filmed instead of presented live or on videotape. And again, that sounds slightly Monty Python-ish, though Monty Python premiered, I believe, 1969. So Well, I guess around the same time, but, you know, didn't really make it onto the shores, you know, when it was, you know, first premiering in the UK. But that sounds kind of Monty
Python-ish. No, most of, yeah, well, most of what people know for about the, no, it does, especially when you, when they talk about all, because it was like, and that one clip that we both saw, maybe you could insert clip here, George Slater talks about how they were trying to, they wanted to like really mess with people's minds and stuff, and so they had to do some effect where they couldn't do it at the time. So what they wound up doing was shooting film through four different mirrors, so you could have four images on the screen. And the network kind of was freaking out. I was like, dude, people can't look at that many things at one time.
They will go for so many things on the screen at the same time. What do you think you're doing? You're killing me here. There's too many things on the screen.
They had that. They had people. They would. Another story was they would give cameras and film to UCLA film students and just go tell them to go out and shoot stuff. And they had animations and stop motion. So yeah, it'd be kind of interesting to see what was there.
Yeah. So like one skit depicted a young woman trying to get the pill out of a vending machine. You know, edgy.
And she put a quarter in and you panned down and it said the pill. And she started, she went crazy. It wouldn't come out of the vending machine. And she went nuts screaming. They thought, well, this is a woman. This is a sexually aggressive woman. I said, yeah, that happens, you know. Where do you think all of these babies come from? Right?
One skit just, I heard George Slater describe it, involved like some one person on one side of the screen was throwing a rock. And then the other person on the other side of the screen would throw a bigger rock. And then the guy got a spear, and the guy got a bigger spear, and then the guy got an atomic bomb, and it went off, and then it goes back to them throwing rocks again.
Yeah, I mean, it was a kind of, you know, it was a lot of anti-war stuff. And then I was reading comments through some of the stuff and on people on YouTube, and it's like a lot of people like remember like going, oh, I remember when this came on. I was really excited to see the show, but I missed the premiere episode. I figured, oh, I'll catch the next one.
Yeah. So
that never happened. But somebody was mentioning that there was some kind of anti-Israel critique, not just saying, you know, just a critique of Israel's policies.
Right.
And they were wondering how much that might have had to do with stuff.
Oh, yeah. I believe George Slater is Jewish, so...
I know, but that was part of the thing. They were just—it's not. There's a difference between, as you know, between anti-Israel and anti-Jewish. You know, right. That was the point.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah. So So again, it was hosted by a computer, and this was before. Okay, so and we've had, you know, since we've had shows hosted by computers. There was Max Headroom. You know.
Yep.
We've had movies, Tron. Where a computer is a character in it. Yeah, they had a sketch where the Pope was going, peace, baby.
Yeah, peace, baby.
Yeah, Pope. Edgy, the edgy. mean,
well, the thing is, all we have are these secondhand descriptions of the shows, because you would have thought that this would have been leaked out into YouTube at one point, and there's nothing. There is nothing out there.
Yeah. I think that was part of the deal was they couldn't... I think George Slater still got paid, but the agreement was he couldn't show any of the footage.
And the network, my deal with the network was that they wouldn't pay me anything unless I agreed to never air the shows, because if you ever saw the shows, they're brilliant. They're really great.
Yeah, that's interesting, because there's a really good article on Night Flight, which we'll post in the... blog post with this, where they tried to get a hold of the copy of the show,
right.
and even the George Slater people were like going, yeah, no, we can't let it out.
So you said it might be at the TV Museum in New York. Are you sure on that?
No, it is. No, I've actually talked to a mutual friend of ours. Mm-hmm. So you might remember our friend Daniel Frank, comedian from Austin. I remember him saying he actually went there and watched it. They have two episodes.
Right.
The first two episodes, you can go and watch them. And so we're hoping that maybe, Harmon, if you have some time, you can go watch one.
Yeah, if I have time and an iPhone, I could watch it and record it.
Well, I'm sure I would put money on it, they take your phone away or something. If you go,
how much money?
Well,
how
maybe $5.
Dude. How about $500? See, I've been playing poker lately, yep. And that's called an all in.
Are you bluffing
that's
me?
No, it's called an all in. Do right, you, well, you got the nuts? Well. Just if you got the nuts, go all in.
Yeah, dude. Well, I'm thinking they'll probably take your, but you could try. That's all I'm saying. So out there, everybody, if we can convince Harmon to go down there, maybe spend an hour or so. So they said they have two
episodes.
I'll
go do it. Yeah.
And I think it's free. I think if you just go down there.
I think I've been there before a long time ago when I was just visiting when I didn't live here. Mm-hmm. I think it's somewhere around Midtown, but I'll go investigate.
And you could probably, I bet you could make multiple pieces of content out of that if you went and watched that.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is that's what everyone says. There were only two episodes, but it's like, no, if they were like really going to premiere this as a TV show, you know, you have to have a season, which, you know, back in that day would have been 12 or 16 episodes.
No. They originally got a commission for 13 and then they upped it to 16. So there's probably.
So they had more. Yeah, because there's some interesting like tidbits floating around. Like, for example, I think the second episode, the monkeys were supposed to
you be. You just took the monkeys right out of my mouth. Yeah, so I have to mention that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, the monkeys filmed a guest segment, which was scheduled to be broadcast on March 12th, 1969, but it was canceled, so none of that material was ever seen. And the guest host for the second episode, by the way, was Robert Culp.
And his wife. But the interesting thing about the monkeys one is it's monkeys minus Peter Tork. Nobody, all the other guys were still there, but Peter Tork was the one who had left.
Yeah, that was, so I guess that was after they filmed Head, so that was filmed 68 maybe?
I think so, yeah, 68.
And then the series was over, then so just a footnote, it's always like these guys like Peter Tork, I think was always like, no, man, this is bullshit. This I'm going to go off and make my own music. Oh, yeah, well, show me some Peter Tork music that stand the test of time. Do we have that solo album, Just Tork, that people are still talking about these days? No, they had a great songwriting team.
I don't think Peter Tork produced Repo Man.
Michael Nesmith. Yeah, exactly.
Michael Nesmith, yeah.
Do you know, I once interviewed Davy Jones.
Oh yeah, was he? How was he?
He's dead now, but then he was a little. Yeah. Oh, he was great. He was. I interviewed him on the phone, and while I was interviewing him, he lived in Florida, and this was maybe about 10 years ago, and he was biking. He was biking on the coast, and I talked to him for about an hour.
Okay, cool.
It's longer than what I needed to talk to him, but then he started going. You know, started talking about being at parties with John Lennon, and I'm like, go on, Davy Jones, tell me more.
Well, they were he was in the he was in the cast of Oliver, and they were on the same, as part of the cast of Oliver, he was on the same show, the same Ed Sullivan show as the Beatles.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so I remember that trivia somewhere. Yeah, so knew him back in the day.
That's right. So we digress a bit, but that's sort of, I think, a part of our template of our show.
I think it's kind of linked
in here.
When we
franchise the show and like how The Office franchised to say Spain or Romania, when we franchise Comedy History 101 to other countries and they'll have their country's hosts do it, in the guidelines, they'll say, get off point a lot.
Yeah, no, it's good. I mean, I think that if I could bring things back on, if you don't mind me bringing things back
please
on.
Do,
point,
little, please do.
Or if I could say to turn them on point a bit. Yeah. I think one of my favorite stories about the show was that Tim Conway was telling, maybe insert clip here, the one where Tim Conway is talking about where they had, he was living in L.A. at the time, because, you know, he's on the Carol Burnett show as well. And they were having the premiere party in L.A., like right when it started airing in New York. And then by the time it was supposed to air in L.A., 2 hours later or whatever, it had already been canceled. So he was just saying, we had the premiere and the closing party at the same time.
Yeah, that Turn On was a show that George Schlatter thought was going to be hysterical. And it kind of was, but it was way ahead of its time. I'm not sure, even if you saw it today, that maybe that time has also passed. We did the show. It came on a Tuesday night, I think, or something like that. It aired first in New York, and we had a opening party out here at a hotel, and we were waiting for the reviews. As it came across the country, it was being canceled. It got canceled in New York, and when it got to Ohio, they shut it off after 15 minutes. I mean, they didn't even let it go the whole half hour. So, the station manager called and said, get that off. I mean, a guy who plays an organ in case the station blows up hadn't played in 20 years. And it came, by the time it got to California, it was off. So we had the coming out party and the cancellation party, very economical because it was all in one evening, gone. So, I am so proud of it, yeah. Every time George receives an award, I'm always in the audience going, George, don't forget to tell him about Turner.
Yeah, yeah, which I guess will segue to the reactions of the airing of Turn On, the one and only airing of Turn On. So it was really what George Slater said. It was really the person who really brought it down was this network affiliate. The guy who ran a network affiliate in Cleveland, Ohio. So he was a fan of Peyton Place, and all that this guy in Cleveland knew was this show was preempting Peyton Place.
Yeah, and he was very vocal about it. Like when it went, so he started calling other stations, I think, was
yeah.
Deal? Do you have the what was the story there?
So basically he started calling other stations. He told the stations that our switchboard is lighting up because of this. And later I think it was like Tim Conway said he knew someone that visited that station, and they looked at the switchboard, and there was only actually just two lines on the switchboard.
Yeah, that was the one where they did the emergency thing where they pulled the organ player. And they went to black and just pulled the organ player in the station. That apparently it was something they hadn't done in like 20 years.
Yeah, it was such a there's no way we could go on with this. That I mean, it was just like they're 15 minutes in and they went to the commercial and they came back. And if you've been watching, there was instead of the show, just the organ player. Which, sounding to the theme of this show, that sounds like people might have thought that was part of the show.
Yeah.
First, I'd like to get footage of that organ player.
I know, dude. I'm sure. That's like, I can't believe this is on YouTube. I cannot believe the show is not leaked out somewhere. This is like the Holy Grail now, dude.
Yeah. So here's a few more reactions to the show. I think. Let's see, after seeing the episode, several stations, the Western time zone decided not to broadcast the show at all. I think a station in Denver stated, we have decided without hesitation that it would be offensive to a major segment of the audience if they showed it. Viewers in Little Rock, which disliked the show, but decided to air it, jam the station's switchboards with complaints. ABC affiliate in Dallas elected to air the show on the following Sunday night at 10:30 time to overwhelming negative response. Okay, that's all right. ABC executive stated that creatively, Turn On did not work. He compared the show negatively to the comedy of Dean Martin, Laugh-In and the Smothers Brothers, which the executive described as absolutely beyond belief, awfully blue, but those shows are popular, and unlike Turn On, they're funny.
Yeah, so there we go. Yeah, I think I like the, if I could read the, so we talked about the original guy from Cleveland who was all pissed off about the show. He actually went out of his way and sent a telegram to ABC management. To the ABC network management. Yeah. So, and the telegram read as this. if you naughty little boys have to write dirty words on the walls, please don't use our walls. Turn on is turned off as far as WEWS is concerned.
Well, I think it's also, you know, okay, so you got to look at it. It's like 1969, so it was also kind of time of culture clash. So it was kind of like, yeah, you know, the squares totally. And the hipsters kind of facing off. So I think it was just probably a little bit too, it was kind of like laughing, but again, I don't know. I never seen it, but what I just know from what I've heard, yeah. You know, it was like, you know, it was the squares just didn't get it. But also, it could have been really not funny. I don't know. No one knows.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be like trying to air Adult Swim right now in, like, prime time or something, you know? So that's the feeling I get.
Oh, like if you aired an Adult Swim show that currently back in 1969?
Like a Tim and... it sounds a lot like a Tim and Eric kind of thing.
Yeah. So, but, it, you know, it pissed off the squares, I guess. But,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, they were going unconventional against formula. They didn't have a host. They had a Moog synthesizer instead of a laugh track. It was filmed inside a computer, you know, which was the concept. So,
yeah.
But regardless, in the 1980 book, The Worst TV Shows Ever, stated that Turn On was actually quite close to the original concept for Laugh-In. It wasn't that it was a bad show. It was that it was an awkward show. So, and again, like on the first episode of anything, you know, it takes a couple episodes to get legs.
Yeah, it takes a little bit to, yeah.
But again, we won't know.
Yeah, it's if you go back and watch some of those first Seinfeld episodes, back when it was called the Seinfeld Chronicles, I mean, the pacing on that is so slow compared to the later episodes.
Right. So, you know, it had to maybe get its legs. But so the next week when it was scheduled to come back on the February 12th episode, maybe some fans of the show, instead of getting turned on, they got the ABC Wednesday Night Movie.
Ah, what was that?
Okay, so it was something written by the guy Harlan Ellison.
Famous science fiction writer.
And he said the last quote about it wasn't a bad show, it was an awkward show. But I remember reading whatever movie that ran was also rated one of the worst movies of all time. So it was a bit of irony. Or was that the plan? Oh.
Yeah. Oh, or maybe it was like, yeah. Exactly. I think one of the other, because that aired on ABC, Turn On aired on ABC.
Yeah.
All that stuff that happened with Turn On, that also led them to reject another pilot.
Tell them about that.
In which they said the ABC management said the lead character was too foul-mouthed and bigoted.
You stupid meathead! Dumb meathead!
So this pilot was written by a gentleman by the name of Norman Lear. Oh. And it was called All in the Family. And so one of the CBS picked it up, and they're the ones that kind of ran to the end zone with the football, if I could use a football.
Yeah, with the show that changed, you know, television history, no doubt.
More or less.
Yeah, but, you know, it says here that ABC got, in part, and again, in the social media age, this seems like, you know, I guess the angry phone calls would be equivalent to nowadays, you know, angry tweets.
Angry tweets, yeah.
So they said they got 369 calls complaining and 20 calls supporting it. That doesn't seem like very much. But again, it's just like, I guess people had a call rather than just, you know, type on their phone.
Yeah, no, they actually had to go to the phone and make it. They had to did a physical activity.
Yeah, so network officials, after they got 369 calls of complaints, the network told their sponsor, Bristol Myers, that the show was unacceptable, and Bristol Myers ordered Schlatter to end production.
Oh, dear. Okay. Yeah. All right.
So, and again, I was just researching something on the TV show Lassie, and it was back in the day when sponsors pretty much ran the shows. Because Lassie was basically owned by Campbell's Soup. who was the sponsor throughout the whole run of Lassie, which was when.
No, it was like it was that total Mad Men, like Walter J. Thompson thing, where the advertising agency produced the show, but it was actually bought by and paid for by the sponsors.
Yeah, exactly. It was and there's a whole interesting history into that. We'll save it for another podcast. But ads used to just people they figured like they, instead of having ads, they could just create content.
Yeah,
and own it. So this being the case, where Bristol Myers, what products does Bristol Myers put out?
I don't know. That'd be an interesting one. Are they still around? They must be.
So lastly, I guess, going back to the adage of that the squares didn't like it was also the name turned on. Some of the networks thought it was a reference to Timothy Leary's acid sort of mantra of tune on, tune in, drop out. So it was like they thought it was maybe it was, a double sort of meaning on it.
Oh, I'm sure that was in there somewhere. I think it was intertwined.
Yeah.
With the spirit of the time, the zeitgeist, as they would say.
Yeah, it was 1969. So any final takeaways on the one and only episode of Turn On?
Number one, I'm curious to see if it is as bad as people say it is. And number two, I want Harmon to go to the Paley Center in New York and watch an episode of the show.
Yeah, I'll look into that. So, if I can bring a camera, I will record. At least I can record audio.
If you can. Yeah, but you should cut that part out, because then we're telling
Joel, them. Oh, do you think they tune into this?
They might.
Yeah.
Might have to change your name.
Yeah. There you go. I'll have to wear a mustache.
Fedora.
Yes.
I'm Tim Conway, here to check out the...
if it does exist, I will bring, I'll at least record audio of it.
Okay, that would be good. Okay.
So there. Yeah. So I think that pretty much covers the history of Turn On, the biggest flop in comedy history, comedy TV history. And with that, it's time to plug away. Scott, do you have anything to plug?
Well, hey, Harmon, as usual, well, we have a new episode of This is the President up just this week. You can hear Harmon and I talk about the October surprise. Yes, it's kind of a rerun, but Harmon has a new twist on things. Also, we've
oh, you meant you meant it was it was we did do it twice.
Yes, okay. We did do it twice, yeah, but you weren't. This is like the first time that you were listening in on the phone call, same time as me. So you'll be able to hear us all the time, and then be sure to stick around, turn in. We're gonna have lots of stuff to talk about during the elections, and then I got a couple short films out making the circuit now, which is pretty exciting. I am actually off to Prague this weekend to show my film The Escape Agents at the Jihlava Film Festival in the Czech Republic, and then in a couple weeks I'll be at the Winterthur Film Festival in Switzerland with another film called Everything You Want to Know About Sudden Birth But We're Afraid to Ask, and hopefully coming to places in the States soon.
Nice. And for me, the first week in November, November 2nd through 4th, I will be performing / producing a 3-day storytelling festival called Storyfest at the People's Improv Theater's new locale in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. There'll be great shows. It's a mixture of New York and North Carolina comedic performers, and I'll be performing my show, Harmon Leon Infiltrates Trump America, on that Saturday night. And as always, check out all our episodes of Comedy History 101 on our site, wordsoverchair.com. Subscribe on iTunes. Comment on iTunes. If you like the show, that's how you show you support it. Just write us a comment and we'll read it on the air. And with that, thanks a lot for tuning in, and bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everyone.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.